Okay, so we'll get this party started, get this ball rolling. Welcome to Genesis class, I think 12. It's Wednesday, April 18th, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We've been zigzagging a little bit through the first, 12, 13, 14 chapters of Genesis. We've been asking a bunch of big questions, and tonight, I think we're going to get a big answer, but it's a bunch of fun stuff. First of all, I need to give you, did I give you guys the kill a year code yet? Okay, good answer. So, I got to give you this code. Sometimes scientists create a code to scare other people off, okay? So that if you don't know the deal, you're not going to, interrupt their flow or whatever. And I'm going to put this up. Do not let this freak you out. I will explain it.
Oh, my gosh.
What this says, it's 4.2 kiloyear BP aridification bond event. Now, that will scare the pants off just about anybody that runs across that. Nobody's going to go that's not a climatologist and study that or open that page or whatever. People like to do this. They have to do this. So, for instance, Bobby, give me the code word for your military specialty and a couple examples using the acronyms.
Air Surveillance Technician, AST would be the acronym for that. AWACS was the system we used.
AST is a what?
Air Surveillance Technician, a radar man.
And what do you call that specialty? That's your MOS?
One Alpha 431.
Okay. Give me some kind of cop code. Like you're going to call on the, like a cop code, like you're going to say, oh, it's a 187 on blah, 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 right? So we have codes like that in the culinary world, okay? Say, I say Bobby. Name the traditional Escoffier mother sauces. And Bobby says?
Veloute, bechamel, espagnol, tomato, and I'm going to forget hollandaise.
Hollandaise. Right? That's the five. So these are codes that people set up to see if anybody knows their field. So cops can talk to each other and say stuff, and people don't have any idea what they're talking about. They're like, he's a blah, 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 and a blah, 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 and everybody, and the perp has no idea what's going on, right? Military guys, same thing. Where'd you do this? What's your MOS and blah, 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 and these code words, right? That's what this is, except this is for historical climatologists. Now, it's hilarious, because once you know what it means, you're going to laugh, because it's really obviously a code, because it doesn't mean anything unusual or weird. Here's what it means. 4.2 kiloyear BP means 4,200, 4.2 kiloyear, 4,200 years before the present. 4,200 years before the present, there was an aridification bond event. Bond's a scientist who discovered these aridification events. That's what that means. It was really, really dry. There was like a big drought 4,200 years before the present.
Wouldn't kilo be 1,000?
Yeah, so 4.2 thousand, so 4,200.
Okay.
4.2 thousand, exactly. So it's 4.2 thousand or 4,200. So 4,200 years, this is a real thing. Feel free to look it up. But 4,200 years before the present, there was, in the Middle East, an extreme drought event. Why on earth does that matter to us? Well, that is the century that we're in with Abraham. And do you remember why Abraham goes to Egypt? Because there's a horrible drought in the land. What the historic climatologist with their little funky code did was accidentally prove the Bible again. Okay? I'm in love with all these scientists because they keep trying to create their own world and they keep trying to avoid ours and they keep proving over and over again in dramatic fashion. There's not another such event for 1,000 years on either side. So not only does this say the 22nd century BC, which is what we're in for Abraham, we've tracked that exact time with our tracking, but there's not 1,000 years on either side that could work. So it has to be. So this is proof of our tracking system and the chart we're working on. From the world of historic climatologists who have no idea who Abraham even is. That's the kind of thing that has me running around giggling all the time.
Are you referring to Noah as the time of Noah?
I'm talking about Abraham right now.
You're talking about Abraham.
4.2, so 4200 gives us the 22nd century BC, which is 2100 to 2200 BC, which is when Abraham was born and when Abraham started his travels, which is where we left off last time. So this is, now I haven't figured out what the 3.9, there's a 5.9 kill a year event. I haven't figured out what that has to do with anything. I'm working on it. But it might have been really dry right before or right after the flood. But anyway, I'm working on that. But the bottom line is, this is the kind of stuff where a completely unrelated field that has nothing to do with anything that we're studying or anything that a theologian or a Bible student or whatever would ever study. And here it comes around behind. And I'm not talking a little bit of support. This is a major thing. So every historic climatologist in the world has recognized this event. They write this code. They have their little websites and their books about this code so that none of us bother them. They're in their little climatologist world. They're going to their climatologist convention in Baltimore or whatever. And no one bothers them because they say, okay, here we're going to talk about the 4.2 kiloyear BP air. And everybody's like, no, we're not. We're going to go out in the lobby and eat the snacks. Because nobody wants to break that code. It's really simple. 4,200 years, 4,200 years before the present, it got really dry. Thanks, guys. So there's like dozens and dozens of books about this. You can look it up. And they have a whole world going on out there where they're talking about this and what it means. And they're fairly certain that it's the reason for the collapse of two things. The first thing that they're relatively certain is the reason for the collapse of is the Akkadian kingdom. The first empire we talked about last time, right? Which is where Abraham was born in one of their very southern cities called Ur, in a section called the Chaldeans. And we decided that Abraham, being such a big deal, right, so wealthy and so powerful, that him traveling around would be quite noticeable and interesting to the powers that be. And the movements that are happening don't make a whole lot of sense unless something big and dramatic is going on, like the fall of empires, like the space between empires. If there's a space between empires, you can move around and do whatever you want because no one's really in control, right? So he goes from Ur to Haran, then over to the Holy Land in Canaan, and then down into Egypt. And we have this really bizarre thing that happens. We talked about last time how he has this interaction with the Pharaoh. An Egyptologist reads that section without the benefit of everything else. But as an Egyptologist, they read that section and they scoff because it doesn't make any sense. The Pharaoh's dynamically powerful individuals. They were considered divine in most cases. A random traveling nomad weirdo is not going to be hanging out with the Pharaoh talking about his wife. Doesn't make any sense. Unless the traveling weirdo is actually not just a random vagabond, but a massively wealthy person with a huge amount of people and animals with him that are a great resource for whoever his ally is. And we're in an intermediate period of pure chaos where the Pharaoh doesn't know where to turn. And that's what we're in. And the climatologists have told us that probably this event was what caused the downfall of that first kingdom, that first section of dynasties called in Egypt. So that would create what's called the first intermediate period where there was chaos. Now to me, this is all just lining up in this insane Bible power way, because none of these fields are interreferenced. They're not cross-referencing. But you're talking about the idea of Abraham moving during a period of time where there was a great drought, and then having to go down into Egypt because Egypt had stores, right? Now, Abraham, just think about this. Just think about this. Abraham's going to have a son, the son of promise eventually. He's going to have two, but we're going to talk about Isaac. And Isaac's going to have a son, and he's going to have a son, and that guy's going to have 12 sons, which are going to be the tribes of Israel. You guys with me? And one of those kids is going to get kidnapped or get sold into slavery by his brothers and thrown in a pit, and this is Joseph, and Joseph's going to go to Israel. I mean, going to go down into Egypt. Now, what happens to Joseph in Egypt? You guys remember, right? We're going to study all this as we go through the Bible. But you remember that he is able to sort out through a series of, he has a series of issues, first of all. Kind of gets trapped by a shady lady and ends up in prison for a period of time, and all kinds of weird stuff happens to him. But eventually he becomes the Pharaoh's right-hand man, the governor. And the reason he becomes the governor is because he has this understanding from these dreams and such of the fact that there's a big drought coming, and they need to store up the grain during the prosperous time. So 7 years of prosperity followed by 7 years of drought. This happens when he's there. And then everything falls apart. Remember, that's why his brothers come to Egypt, and that's why he sees them again, and the whole family moves, because there's this massive drought in the land. And they have to look for grain, and they can't find food in Canaan where they're at. So they come into Egypt looking for food. And the guy in charge is Joseph. And this is the whole story of the reunification and his brother Benjamin and all the love. And that's how the Israelites, the Hebrews, get to Egypt, right? Think about that. When is this happening, and how is this all happening? Abraham is, what, great-grandfather or something like that of Joseph, right? And he just went into Egypt based on a giant drought. You see this pattern? Like they can understand what's happening more because God has been guiding this family this entire time, putting Joseph in a position of power. And how is Joseph, this random weirdo slave guy, about to be in a position of power? Well, the same way Abraham can have this discussion with the Pharaoh about his wife, and that's because we're in an intermediate period. We're in this time of utter chaos. And in between, there's all these powerful pharaohs, and all this amazing stuff happens in Egypt. But we're zigging and zagging inside of this. And now that we have these anchor points, now that we can see these solid anchors through time, we can cross-reference with, say, Egypt, and we can figure out how this is working. So the climatologist and the historians and the Egyptologist and everybody starts to get on the same page all of a sudden, whether they want to or not. And you end up with this amazing world that you can finally start to put all these pieces together. Now, like I said, God does what he's going to do, and it doesn't matter. If he's going to empower Abraham, he's going to empower Abraham. The details of a drought and a, you know, 4.2 kill a year, blah, 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 none of that really matters. But the fun part is that all the guys who would believe that that has nothing to do with the Bible, that the Bible is some, you know, fairy tale weird thing that guys on street corners hold up, those same guys are confirming it in dramatic fashion right and left. And I mean, I don't know. I think I'm going to go to the climatologist convention and just like, I don't know, buy everybody a drink. I have no idea. I don't know what to do. I'm just so excited that it's so mind-boggling. We talked about the weirdest things, like the tree ring guy. We talked about the tree ring guy from Cornell and how they have made the middle chronology, which is the chronology that we prefer, but it was up for question until he took his cross-referencing in his world, which was, radio carbon dating combined with tree rings, and was able to prove the validity of this middle chronology. But this middle chronology is exactly where we've landed. And it's just kind of earth-shattering. So are we ever going to get the answer we started this whole journey out, which was trying to date the flood? And the answer is tonight, I think we finally get the answer. No one else on the earth has it, but just be prepared. Tonight you shall have it, and you shall go forth. You're not going to believe it, but here we go. But first of all, let me write these anchor dates down, just so everybody's on, just so everybody has these anchor dates in their permanent memory base. We're calling them anchor dates because they're provable, and they go back in time, and each of them anchor the previous one. Okay? So we start with the first anchor date of 966 BC, and that is the beginning of Solomon's temple. He starts the house of the Lord, fourth year of his reign. His reign starts 970. Fourth year of his reign ranks to about 931. Now, proving that date wasn't easy, but luckily he had enemies, and those enemies are recorded in other calendars, like in other records, like the Assyrian record. 480 years later, Exodus 1446. Now, these are all plus or minus, okay? Plus or minus a couple years. You know, this is a long time ago, things happen, there's hiccups, okay? But this is really close, okay? And then, 1446 BC, Exodus. Your people are going to be in Egypt 430 years. Now, this is the biggest discussion that there is when it comes to Old Testament scholars. The rabbis and the majority of scholars on that area have decided it's 210 years. We talked about the Kohath problem and how there's a guy that came in with Joseph, and he's named as Moses' grandfather. If it's the same guy, it can't be longer than a couple hundred years. We talked about all that. But the Bible is very specific, once again, in Genesis and in Exodus. It says 430 years. It says 400 years. There'll be strangers, and there'll be, for part of that time, there'll be slaves. All of that matches a time frame, giving us Joseph arriving in Egypt in 1876 BC. Joseph arrives in Egypt. That's an anchor date. And that means that if we calculate back from Joseph, we get our approximation of Abram. Now, this is where we are, but this is 2167 BC, Abraham's birth. This is a lot of work. We've been through a lot of work. It's now well over 1,000 hours. It's now over 100 sources. 100 major sources. It's now, that little booklet I gave you guys is now approaching 100 pages. So this is no joke to put those dates on the board and have confidence. Okay? But we do. But the big question mark for me has always been the flood. Now, I don't doubt the flood. I don't doubt what happened before it or what after it happened after it. I don't doubt how it worked. I don't doubt anything about what the Bible says. But putting it into a timeline becomes close to impossible. If you come up at it this way, you get a certain time frame. But you come down at it this way, you get another entirely different time frame. So trying to figure out what's going on and why there's so much difficulty, and I cannot believe Andy is not here, because this is his class, okay? This is his class right here. I'll have to tell him separately. But I've been praying about this and studying this for months upon months with one idea of trying to figure out when the flood was. It doesn't really matter. I mean, there was a flood and then people continued their lives. But the problem is, it's going to affect your understanding of what the Bible's trying to say. Let me explain what I mean. Abraham goes down into Egypt, right? And in Egypt, Egypt's fully developed, okay? There's pyramids. Abraham saw the great pyramids, the same ones you guys see on TV, except they were white. They were flat-sided and whitewashed. They were very bright in the sun, okay? That's worn off, but he saw all that. This was an old, established, powerful kingdom that Abraham visited. The problem is, if you count back from Abraham to Noah, and those are people, right? And his father, Terah, and then his father, you've only got a few hundred years. It's really only 300 or 400, right? And the problem is, if the flood really did wipe everything out, then how does Abraham come into a fully functioning Egypt? Okay? So if you look at it, you'll see that there's this like, right here, there's Abraham, there's Shem, okay? And you see how he has his kid, you know, 30 years old or whatever it is, and 40 years old, bang, 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 Abram. And there's approximately 300 years, give or take. If you use that, you're in trouble. You're in trouble for a couple major reasons. The first reason is that Abraham's about to arrive at a place that either survived the flood entirely and was untouched by the flood, or built really, really fast from some random source, like really fast. But it doesn't really make a lot of sense. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I think this is why so many people think that early part of Genesis is mythology, right? Because it's so hard to believe. You know, last time we looked at all those language isolates that occurred around the Tower of Babel area, we've got linguists, like, by the thousands supporting the Tower of Babel and then telling their friends they don't, you know. It's crazy. But you've got a problem. And so I've been trying to figure this out and praying and studying and praying for months, because I'm like, okay, God, here's the deal. If we count back from Abraham to Noah, it's a few hundred years. We get a date of maybe 2400, 2500 BC as the date of the flood. If that happens, we've got a variety of problems. First of all, I've got about 400 archaeological sites and cities and everything else predating that. And I don't know what that means. You know, if that's true, and the flood is in 2500 BC, then God, you're going to need to tell me how there's all these cities and cultures and pottery and everything else existing, but back to 3000. Also, how is Abraham going to show up in a place that's fully functional with pharaohs and a long history of pharaohs that we know? We have a history of those pharaohs that go back to 3000-ish. How's that supposed to work? You know? So if we believe that there's the 300-year period that it seems to count back to Noah, then we're going to have to figure out our theology concerning the rest of the world and the flood and how it works. If we believe that the flood was indeed catastrophic worldwide flood, then we need to come at it. So let's come at it from that angle. What if the flood was a catastrophic worldwide flood? Well, if that's the case, then we're not going to have any significant culture and development till after it. Anything else is going to be ruins or possibly covered up entirely by mud, etc., from a giant worldwide flood. But your significant developments that you can trace all the way back step by step, those developments, those things you can see archaeologically or anthropologically, those things you can track, they're gonna have a hiccup around the flood. Well, all that stuff traces smoothly and easily back to around 3000, 3100. It all does. You have the first pharaoh of the first dynasty, Menet. He's coming in around 3100-ish. You've got language in the 2900. You've got Akkadia. You've got the establishment of Nineveh, 2600-2700. You've got all this stuff happening that we can prove between 2400 and 3000. But around 3100, nothing. Every single society, every single culture, every single language, every piece of writing, every city, everything starts in that 3,000-3,100 range. So it looks obvious that the flood's around 3,100 or earlier. It could be earlier. It could have taken a while to develop stuff. It could be earlier. But no later than, let's say, 3,000 for a flood. But now you've got a problem. And now your problem is the Bible looks wrong in the genealogy. You understand my problem? Or our problem? Because the Bible can't be wrong. But 1,000 sites are also a problem. We're trying to cross-reference with, you know, other sciences. They're supporting us right and left. We want them. We want carbon dating. You know, we don't want to try to disprove carbon dating and open up a museum about it, okay? Because we need carbon dating to show us that the stuff that we find about Joshua is real. You understand what I mean? We're not trying to disprove that. We're trying to be friends with that. Praying, studying, praying, studying, and finally, the big answer. The big answer. You guys ready? So here it is. We're going to go to Genesis now, obviously. And we're going to pull up the stuff that we've been working on. And I'll give you the exact verses in just a split second here. We're going to be right around the same place we have been. But I'm going to show you something that I found, and God pointed it to me in a note in the study guide notes for the newest New King James Study Bible. In the note, the Old Testament scholar in charge of the notes for the study Bible for the New King James Version, which is brand new. This is all brand new from the last few years. Had a note, and I read that note, and I looked at it, and then God said, "This is it," and it blew my face off. After I had reconstructive surgery on Monday, and my face was reattached by Tuesday, and here we are. But I'll show you what it is. We have this list of people, right? So we're going to go back. And we're gonna go. We're gonna go back to where we get the Tower of Babel. Now, right before the Tower of Babel in Genesis 10, we get the Table of Nations. Okay, this is the account of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Noah's sons, who themselves had sons after the flood. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog, the sons of Gomer, blah blah blah. Okay, we get all that list: Hamites, Cush, Egypt, etc. And depending on your, you know, and then you get to Nimrod, and which we think Nimrod is probably Sargon, and blah, blah, blah. And then you go through this whole description. And then the sons of Shem and Elam and Arphaxad and all of that and Uz and Shelah and all this stuff. And here's where the answer comes. Because these people are not just people. Okay? These names represent a person at some point, a person, like a guy named Shem, okay? But that's not all they represent. They don't just represent a person. They represent more than a person, okay? These names become places. They become cultures and groups of people. They become cities. So, to show you that in more depth, we go to right after the Tower of Babel. Now, we were asking why the Tower of Babel is planted in the middle of the Shem description. It seemed weird. Now it doesn't. Because the Tower of Babel is a universal kind of connector, and the way in which that works, I think it's a sign for what we're about to talk about. But watch this. Before the Tower of Babel, they list all the stuff. After the Tower of Babel, they list the stuff again. And now, here's what they say. And he begot so-and-so, and so-and-so begot so-and-so, and so-and-so begot so-and-so. Now, first of all, the word begot. First step is, and we study these ancient languages, right? And we study what they mean. So, we all know John 3:16. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Now, you tell me, based upon John 3:16, this isn't Greek mythology, okay? God didn't come down, disguise himself as a swan, and have sex with Mary, right? So what does begot mean? Because it's only begotten Son. How is the Son begotten? It's not a son that was born of a sexual activity between a man and a woman. That's not what that means. I mean, it could mean that, but that's not what that means, right? It's created. Now, you can, you know, Burl and Karen can create a child. They can begot something. But they can also begot a household. They can also begot a nation. Do you understand? Now, let's take a look. We noticed last time that there was a hiccup in the timing of Abram, right? Because it says this is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now it says when? It says Terah lived 70 years and begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran, right? It says that. Well, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know how many of you, hey, there's a lot of ladies in the room. So just raise your hand if you had 3 kids in 1 year. Not twins, 3 separate kids. Is that possible? That's not possible. So Abram, Nahor, and Haran are separated by some period of time in some way. How do you begot 3 kids with 1 wife in 1 year? You don't. Okay? So this means something else. It means something else besides just the regular birth of a regular child. So let's see if there's another clue in this section of Genesis 11, 27 to 32. So this is Terah. And Terah is a native of the land of Ur of the Chaldeans, okay? And Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. And we know that these are real people. However, let's just take a look at Haran for a second. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. So that means Abram and Haran, yes?
What verse, please?
We're 11:27.
11:27.
11:27 to 32 is where we're at. Abram, Nahor, and Haran are brothers, right? Then Abram and Nahor took wives, Abram's wife Sarah, and then Nahor's wife Milcah, daughter of Haran. Are you with me? So either Nahor is marrying his niece which is his younger brother's niece. So I don't know how this timing's supposed to work. And they're separated by X number of years. So I don't know how that timing's supposed to work. But then, so daughter of Haran is what she's called, daughter of Haran. And then he took Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, and they went out, and they, where did they live? Where did they live when they left out Ur of Chaldeans? Where did they go and live? But after that, they came to Haran and dwelt there. So did they dwell inside of Abraham's brother? Probably not. That would hurt. Are Lot and Milcah brother and sister? Why are they living in a place called Haran? Do you understand what I'm saying? Haran's being used three times to describe three different things in one set of passages very close together. I believe that this is our clue. That Haran can be a person, but also a people, and also a place. Right? So, I could say I'm a child of America. Right? My grandfather was the son of Ireland. He was a son of Ireland. Do you understand? Now, he could be a person, but it could also be a place, but we could also be a people. This means that if we track this back, we get this happening several times. So we might be talking about an individual. We also might be talking about a group of people developing. And we get a lot of proof for that. Okay, let's go back before the Tower of Babel into Genesis 10. And you'll notice that we have the sons of Ham are Cush and Mizraim, which is Israel, and Put and Canaan. And Canaan, of course, he's called the father of Canaan. And of course, Canaan's a place. We talk about Canaan all the time, right? And all these places, you know what they said? You know how we thought Nimrod might be Sargon? And that would be a huge interconnection of all the cultures. It'd be a major thing. But they say that Sargon came out of Kish. Nimrod is the son of Cush. And we know there's a hiccup involving vowels in these languages. Semitic languages have a vowel hiccup. You don't always get a good vowel, okay? So Yahweh doesn't have the A in it. You understand? So the point of this is Nimrod comes out of Cush. Sargon comes out of Kish. In the story of Sargon, it's the place, Kish. It's a location. Cush begot Nimrod. Nimrod's a son of Cush. Cush is a place. So what we have here is a very clever and fascinating use of words of peoples and nations. You see how it says this is peoples and nations? It says that. This is becoming nations. So what we're in is a time frame where individual people are turning into nations. You are from Georgia. You could say I'm a son of Georgia, or Georgia begot me, or whatever. And we have in here Uruk, which we know is a city, Babel, which we know is an area, Akkad, which we know is a city and a kingdom, Shinar, which we know refers to all of Mesopotamia, etc., etc., etc. Right? So what you're watching happen in Genesis 10 is the nations coming out of Noah. You're watching these nations develop, and you're watching a person become the founder, either by taking over things that are already there or founding new things. But the person's becoming a founder of an entire thing. This is the answer, the big answer. Because this gives us the ability to have that time frame be any length. Now, it doesn't give us a great ability to figure out what the time frame is, because the time frame is big. It's bigger than a couple hundred years. Maybe it's 500, maybe it's 1,000, maybe it's 10,000, but it's bigger. If we go into the 3,100 range, give or take, with this, not only do we have 40 to 50 generations between Noah and Abraham, we have the time to develop everything. And we put it back to the point where everything stops, and there's likely to be a flood right before that. So, 3,100-ish, you know, 3,200, okay. There's a desertification event in 3,900, so it's got to be either right before or right after that, but it's got to be later than that more than likely. So, it's going to be hard to have a major desertification event during a flood. So, probably 3,200, 3,100. But when it says that so-and-so came out of so-and-so, and so-and-so begot so-and-so, it's going to transform into places, into cultures. That solves the problem that we've had when we read it and go, I don't understand, how does he become Canaan? What does that even mean? It explains that. It also explains how we get the time frame for Abraham to waltz into Egypt and have it fully formed. Because now it's been 1,000 years. And by the way, that 1,000 years now covers when those pyramids were built in the first king, in the first dynasty. The Old Kingdom, I think it's the fourth dynasty of the Old Kingdom when they were built. We now have time for that. All that stuff to happen. Furthermore, we don't have any records of anything before that. That's the crazy part. We have like villages and stuff, like ancient stuff from 10,000 years ago. All this little scattered village things and all that stuff could be what we talked about back during when we talked about Genesis 1 and 2. We talked about how that worked. There could be like, you know, Neolithic people or whatever all over the place, and then God's got his special people and his special project happening in Mesopotamia, and then all this stuff happens, and then things go wrong, flood, everything restarts. We still have old ruins of stuff, but no culture, no language, no writing, no cities, nothing before 3,100. And finally, now we know how that's possible. That also, and this is up to you, but this also can be a reason for these bizarre time frames. Because if you take that back to the previous lineage, the one that goes from Adam to Noah, and you apply the same rules, then you could see a much longer time frame. You could also see people within that time frame that are culturally there's a culture based off of them. And so that 900 years starts to change meaning. It might be a guy's life, one lifespan that long. I mean, that we got plenty of reasons to believe those are also people. But it could also be a reference to the time it takes to develop these cultures. But in this particular case, the hiccup that happens when we talk about Abram's birth with Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and then this mention of Haran multiple times, and then this thing about Nahor's wife. See, if they're in order, Abram, Nahor, Haran, if they're in order of their birth, and that's spread out over a period of years, I don't know how many, 5, 10, 20, I don't know. If that's spread out over a period of years, then Nahor's 10, 20, 30, whatever years older than his brother Haran. And his brother Haran's going to have a daughter that he's going to marry? This timing doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it's possible. I mean, for more on that, see Woody Allen. I mean, it's possible. But, I mean, I wouldn't recommend it. You know? It's going to damage your film career dramatically. But the point is that some of these people are obviously people. But then suddenly we're living and in the same. If you're in the same sentence, living in Haran, the exact same word with the exact same spelling, it has to be a reason. You have to have a reason for this. Seems obvious to me, and I don't know how it happened exactly, but that Haran is a culture. It's a place. They can live in it, And Lot can be a child of Haran, and so can Milcah. She can be a daughter of Haran, just like a daughter of the Revolution or a daughter of Virginia. She can be a daughter of Haran, and Lot can be a son of Haran, and they can be maybe not even really related very tightly. Mm-hmm. I really like where we're going in this study as we move away from incest, because the traditional discussion of Genesis is basically an incest praise session, which makes me very nervous. Okay, because if you had such a love of incest for so many thousands of years, why would it be so condemned and outlawed within the law? Why would we have such dramatic laws in the next book about how bad it is when that's the origin of all of humanity? I think that, you know, either we all need to be Warren Jeffs or we missed something. And I think that what we missed was these are sometimes cultures and places. That time frame gives us more flexibility, by the way. It allows us to be a purist. And this is a really important thing for you old folks. It allows you to be a purist. You can believe, if this is true, in the purity of it. In other words, the whole world's completely destroyed, and there's 8 people left, and that is it. But if you got thousands of years, that's okay. You got time to rebuild everything. You got a son becoming a nation and then becoming Egypt. And Abraham coming into that later. But it's not enough generations for him not... Remember how long people are living? Abraham would go into Egypt and go, "Hey, Egypt, you're my homeboy." They would know each other. Something has got to be going on. Because that person's not that far away, right? It's not that far away. So... I think that we have a combination, and it requires some really in-depth study, and we're going to keep moving. But I think that we have a combination of individual people that are really people, and the idea of multiple names being, the name being multiple people, you know. We do that in the Bible all the time. There's several Pauls, you know, several Sauls, there's several Johns, there's several Marys. There could be multiple people with the same name. And you notice the culture, we don't have, our advantage is we have a family name, right? And then we have a personal name, like I'm Victor Matthews. And even that's confusing because there's 3 of us, okay? But I'm Victor Matthews, right? And there could be 1,000 Matthews, and we could all be Matthews. And we could talk about Matthews. You see what I mean? And this is before... that delineation exists. So there could be John Haran and Samantha Haran and Christina Haran. You see what I'm saying? And they could all just be called Haran, like a people. So I think that what we're dealing with is a mixture. This is the big Holy Spirit enlightenment moment of the week, of my life, really. Because I was praying, and basically here's what happened. I had a little bit of a breakdown, one of those late night crying to the Lord things. And I said, "I've got all this stuff in front of me, and you've given me so much, and there's so many things on this chart, and I know crazy stuff now, like thousands of pages of crazy stuff, and I can't get this one. The flood makes no sense. I don't get it. And I'm begging you for the answer. Just, I'm begging you. Please, please, please." And I just kept saying, "Please, please, please," over and over again. "Give me the answer." And I went back in the Bible. And the Bible I happened to pick up was the Study Bible of the New King James, which is a relatively new book. And I'm reading the sections, I'm reading the notes, and I'm like, there's got to be something. And this guy just says off the cuff, like a little note about Haran, and he says, "You know, these names can represent people as well as cultures, as well as locations. That's how Canaan is Canaan and also Canaan and also Canaan," right? And that's when it hit me. And God just downloaded that and said, "You're going to be all right." Because the flood could be 3,100 or 3,900. because this could be a spread out cultural development time frame that's longer than the period of time. We're told how old a person is when he begot somebody, but that somebody can become multiple people. It could be a whole family. So I'm the father of the Matthews family. Now let's say that I lived a long time and had a whole bunch of kids and grandkids. There could be, I went to the Brenninger reunion. Now the Brenningers are one of my family connections, and that's the one that had all the moonshiners. So we went to the Brenninger family, and the Brenninger cabin is actually a historic site now in the Smoky Mountains. And the original cabin that the Brenninger family household was established, and they had like 12 kids, and then they had kids that had 12, 14 kids. I mean, there were maybe, I don't know, 600-700 people at this event. And a bunch of people RSVP'd, they couldn't come, but like 1,000 people invited, and they're all Brenningers. It's the Brenninger cabin. It's Brenninger. That's the people, and there's 1,000 of them, and they're Brenninger. And that's it. That's what this is. It's Nahor, but then it's Nahor. It's the people of Nahor. It's all these people that are all Nahor. And I want to say that was purely due to that. It also could have been Negan, you know, because I am Negan. And if you don't watch that show, I'm sorry. There's an awful show that I love with all my heart, which is called The Walking Dead.
Oh, no.
And in The Walking Dead, there's this guy named Negan who's the main bad guy, and all the people that follow him call themselves Negan. And the way they bind together is they're all Negan. Who are you? He'll say, "Who are you?" He'll say, "I'm Negan," because that means we're all bound together. And it's kind of like that. They're all Nahor. They're all Abram. They're all Negan. And I guarantee you, no one else has got Negan into a Genesis study. Guarantee it. That's got to get me a seat at Comic-Con. I mean, come on. That's got to get me a seat at Comic-Con. Anyway, the point is that I really think that that's the answer. I think that we have, because you have the Haran example, where you're obviously using a name to represent a person, to represent another person's father who's probably not that person, and a place that they live. So, you know, it's and then Haran dies early, so, you know, we don't have to discuss Haran living in Haran, because that would just be weird, right? But I think that makes sense.